Well, we're back here for number two of our podcast, of which we still don't have a name. So we're waiting on somebody to maybe help us a little bit with our name. Podcast number two, Todd Stapleton, Isaac Isringhausen, and a couple of topics, and this is going to kind of be our way. I think we're going to have one topic a week that will be more on the national scale with sports, and then one that's more on the local scale with sports. So I think that's how we're going to tackle it. And speaking of tackle, boy, that was a terrible segue for sure. Talk a little college football. The college football playoff is here. And I just want to say first, the fact that they have finally done this is huge, I think. I think this is having the 12-team playoff is, I'll be honest, I've always wanted to see them do this. There's been times I really didn't think they wanted to, because I think for the power schools, this gives up a lot of control. Definitely, you know, it opens this up to the non, we don't say blue bloods as much in football, but it is. Mm-hmm. It's the blue bloods, and they don't have as much control over it when it opens up to 12, because there's people in this that they wouldn't necessarily want in the mix. And I say that, and I know that probably sounds bad, but I've always felt like with college football, the big difference to me in college basketball and college football is the blue bloods can avoid whoever they want in college basketball all season long. But when it comes tournament time, that's, you know, it's no holes barred. The mid-majors got a shot. Everybody's got a shot at you, and a lot of times they pull off the upsets. College football, I've always kind of felt, Isaac, like they kind of shielded themselves from that. We're not inviting you to the party at all. You can't come. It's going to be our little party and our little teams, and we'll play each other, but we're not going to let one of you have a shot at us. We're not doing that. We're not opening that door. And I think this is the start of that to some degree.
Absolutely, and that's really what excited me the most about the 12-team playoff. Like you said, there for several years, it was hard for me to really get into college football, because it's like when a team gets one loss, maybe two, their odds of, you know, advancing or playing for a national championship, slim to none. And I felt like it really, you talk about the smaller schools and, you know, Boise State's in there, SMU's in there, they wouldn't have had a chance if we were still in the 14 playoff. Boise State, maybe, but with that one loss, they probably would have been held out. But really, I also felt like it punished teams that played in the Big Ten or the SEC, because, you know, there have been several years where teams like Tennessee, teams like Penn State, who had those two losses to, you know, top five teams, top 10 teams, that would have been gotten out. So I really love that we're now in the 12-team format. And honestly, I wouldn't complain about seeing it extended to 16, maybe even 20 in the future.
I've always wanted 16. So yeah, that would be my hope. So hopefully this will be successful. Have some good football. I think that's kind of the big tip that, and it's going to. I can't imagine it won't be. I mean, there's some, and we talk about the schools that wouldn't make it, the Boise States, the SMUs, Arizona State, even mm-hmm. though they're a power, they're back in a power four, but they're, you know, there's some matchups on here. Tennessee, Ohio State. I mean, man, that's a power matchup. Clemson, Texas is a power matchup. You know, there's, you know, Notre Dame and Indiana. And you don't think of that as a power matchup, but two schools out of Indiana, that's neat. I mean, that's a neat matchup. And, you know, SMU, and this is before your time. Sorry, I've said that again. But back in the 80s, they had a dominant run. Eric Dickerson was there. And then they got in all the trouble. The death penalty was slammed on them. And you know, there was a 30 for 30 by ESPN years ago, and I don't know if you've seen that, about the death penalty, but they got slapped with the death penalty. They didn't have football for two full years, and then not long after they came back, the old Southwest Conference broke up. Well, then SMU was just kind of left out there. They were in Conference USA, you know, and bottom line is it wasn't the same thing. They were at a top level. Southwest Conference was a huge football conference, you know, top level football conference, and they had to dig their way back just to now. They're in the ACC now. They kind of gave up a lot of money rights this year just to get back into the dance. So, for them, hats off. I mean, this has been a 35-year situation for them to get back to the elite status. And here they are, first year in the ACC. They get to the ACC championship game. They stumbled, but they were able to get into the field of 12. So big hats off to SMU for doing this. And Indiana, you know, where's Indiana come from in this whole thing? Indiana is not a football power for sure. Never have been. And here they are in the dance, and they get Notre Dame right out of the gate. So there's some neat stories in here too. And then, you know, Ohio State, Tennessee, what a huge matchup. And it's the 8-9 matchup. So that'd be the, you know, basically the equivalent of your 8-9 when you go to the NCAA tournament. Should be that kind of matchup. So, and it's interesting. You've got home field that comes into play with these two. I don't know if that'll always stay. I kind of wonder if maybe a neutral type of thing will come in at some point. I don't know. It doesn't matter. You know, it should be fine. But, you know, I could see at some point they say, okay, we're going to play, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And maybe we go for a neutral site. But, you know, I'm glad to see this too. I'm a lot like you, that college football never was as high on my list. I grew up in a time when I was a kid, college, they decided it was just the polls that decided who won it. And, you know, 1 and 2 sometimes would match up in a bowl game, but a lot of times 1 played in this bowl game, 2 played in this one. You know, so college football really has, when it comes to the national championship with college football, they've come a long way, and this is a huge step.
Absolutely. You know, and just looking back at some of the years that you've had the 4-team playoff system, I know last year was a really controversial year for that because a lot of people were saying, you know, why not just extend this to the 12-team now? Because that was back when so many teams had just the one loss. Georgia had the one loss. Alabama had the one loss. Florida State, who I will still argue should have gotten in, went undefeated and got missed out. And even going back to some of the smaller conferences, there was, what, a 2-year window where UCF went undefeated twice and they didn't even get a chance because of the conference that they played in. And now seeing that, granted, now they're in the Big 12, but still knowing that teams that play in those smaller conferences now have a outside chance. I know you and I talked about Tulane being a potential one that has a chance, and it's going to be a fun time, and these are some playoff matchups that are definitely going to be must-watch for any football fan, regardless of whether you enjoy high school, college, or NFL.
So looking at those first-round matchups, Friday, December 20th, so less than a week away from now, it'll be Indiana will be at Notre Dame, and then that Saturday will be they've staggered them for you, so you got SMU at Penn State. It will be at the noon game, which I'm assuming it will be 11 a.m. our time. 3 o'clock will be Clemson at Texas, and then Tennessee at Ohio State at 7 o'clock. That one's a neat matchup. That is two powers. It's also two places that have 100,000 seat stadiums between them, so that's kind of neat. That'll be a neat matchup for that first round, kind of to cap it off. And then after that, they do the Fiesta Bowl, the Peach Bowl, the Rose Bowl, the Sugar Bowl. After that, and then the semifinals, and then the national championship finally wraps it up. It is a long wait to get all the way to the national championship, but it's fine. There'll be some good football. And also want to mention, we talk college football playoffs. That's mainly what we're talking about. But Illinois, with their biggest bowl game since, probably 2007.
Yeah.
This is their best bowl game since. They're in the Citrus Bowl. 2 years ago, they were in the Insight.com. That's one notch down from this. So they're one notch better this time around. Because I didn't know for years that they, by the way, the conferences have these contracts, second place, third place goes here. And so they were kind of bound into the Citrus by where they finished. So hats off to Illinois, and that's coming up on December 31st. And well, that broadcast as well on WPMB, they'll take on South Carolina that day. So college football playoff, do you have a prediction?
Man, it's going to be tough because I think a lot of these teams, like you said, like so many teams just match up very well. I think one of the most exciting games, like you said, is going to be that Notre Dame-Indiana game. That's a game that I can see honestly going both ways because, yes, it's going to be played at Notre Dame, but considering the fact that you know, it's an in-state thing. I wouldn't be surprised if that stadium is half and half. And it's going to be interesting because, you know, the only undefeated team there is Oregon, but a lot of people aren't predicting Oregon to win at all, which is kind of shocking to me, but it's going to be fun to watch. And I think just when you look at how many teams that are in there with two losses, like these two-loss conference champions with Georgia as an example, they have a good chance. I know Texas has played extremely close. I know they're going to be without – I know Quinn Ewers was injured for a little bit. I'm not sure about the status on him. I know Carson Beck too. But one team that I wouldn't be shocked if they made it probably to the semis would be Boise State. And I know we were talking about it before we recorded, but so many of these teams have high-powered offenses. Well, what's the easiest way to stop a high-powered offense? Keep them off the field. And the way you can keep them off the field is running the ball effectively. And I think that's one thing that Boise State's done all year with a Heisman hopeful like Ashton Gentry, who's now 100-some-odd yards away from setting a new single-season record, which is more impressive when you think about how many halves he has sat out because of the situations that he's had Boise State into where they can coast in the second half and through on. So that's a team that I think has the potential to be a real sleeper in these playoffs.
Interesting thing we talked about, a lot of people aren't picking Oregon because I've seen a lot of the brackets because Oregon's second round matchup is the winner of Ohio State Tennessee, and I've seen a lot of people have Ohio State beating Oregon in that matchup, which would be a rematch. What if Tennessee beats Ohio State? You know, mm-hmm. Then it kind of changes the element a little bit. And, you know, talking about Notre Dame, you know, when they lost to Northern Illinois, you talk about a team that was done for the old four system. They're done. That's over. Yeah. You lost to Northern Illinois. You're out. You have no chance of getting to the national championship when it was a four-team setup. So this is absolutely because since then they've been – one of the best teams in the country since mm-hmm. that point. They played great football since that point. Well, they stubbed their toe. It happens. It doesn't happen as often in football as it does in basketball, but it happens. You lose to people. You know, I remember Coach Buescher and I talking about this one time with upsets in college basketball. You take any day, once conference play gets started for all the conferences, and you take any day from then on, there's an upset in the top 25. There mm-hmm. is never a day there's not. It happens every day, every night. Teams get knocked off, and the same thing happens in college football, just not as regularly. And I think this, in my opinion, will inspire – I know Alabama would disagree, but I think this will inspire people to play better non-conference games during the season, because if you get knocked off by another power school, it's not going to kill you. Well, used to, it did. Now it's not going to. You still got a chance to rebound and be fine, and you also strengthened your schedule a little bit. And I know we're both very happy Alabama's not in this. So.
Absolutely. You talk, and kind of going off of what you said there, I mean, you talk about tough games and scheduling tough non-conference opponents, and that's one thing that too that I talked about quite a bit with Coach Witt and Coach Jones whenever Altamont and South Central Baseball made their runs in state. One reason why they felt so comfortable once they got to the Supers and beyond was because, you know, they've played North Clay. They played each other. They've played St. Anthony's. Like, they've played the best that the state of Illinois had to offer in terms of baseball because of how loaded the NTC is year in and year out. And it's a big difference whenever, especially with, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids, when you're not getting battle-tested in the regular season and someone comes and smacks you in the mouth in the playoffs, a lot of teams don't know how to respond to that. And, you know, and to your point about Alabama, it's so funny seeing them all complain about not scheduling any strong opponents because they definitely did that in this season, scheduling a real tough non-conference schedule with Mercer.
Very nice. Very, and no offense to Mercer. If you're a Mercer grad, I'm sorry. Yes, I found it funny. And I've got a few people that always swear. My brother has always sworn that Alabama would get in no matter what. They could be 4-8 and they'll get in anyway. So he was pretty shocked when they didn't. So going to kind of segue a little bit into our local topic. And what we were going to talk about this week was each of us was picking a team that we've been impressed with in the early season, boys and girls basketball. So we're going to pick a boys or girls team. So I'll let you start on the boys side.
Just based off how much they lost from last year compared to now, and the position that they're in, San Juan Brownstown has been very impressive. Coach Fiesel, like always, he does an unbelievable job. I know he and I really talked about it a lot in the preseason, just with how much they lost with Adam Atwood, who's one of those guys that you swore was in high school for 10 years because of just how much he contributed and how good he was as a sophomore to now. And the pieces around him, Kate Schaub was a really nice two-year starter too. They got great minutes last year from Josiah and Colin Maxey, as well as Brody Mason. Well, an all-five senior lineup that's gone, and really Lowell Willhauer was the only guy with potential or with starter minutes who came back. And that's something that he and I talked about a lot during the Mulberry Grove tournament, was really no one had any varsity experience. And he said he felt like this is the first time he's had to do real coaching in terms of in-game stuff. And just for them to be in the position they've been in, when you look at the teams they've lost to, I mean, Mulberry Grove has really been on the rise the last few years. Coach Barber's been doing a good job. They lost to North Clay a few nights ago. Can't remember who else they've lost to in that period, but they've been extremely competitive while playing a lot of sophomores and juniors who didn't have so much varsity time last year. And both of the Willhauer boys have been playing extremely well. And it's just always a team that has great chemistry, and it's a team that leans on their defense. And this year, it's going to be no different, especially when you just look at the size that they have and the things that they've been able to do defensively. And if they can get onto a hot night shooting, they're going to be a team that's going to cause some headaches for a lot of teams in the state.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I echo you too. I think Coach Fiesel does an excellent job, and they did lose a lot. I mean, they lost a lot of pieces. And the funny thing was, and I think this goes back to thinking he does a good job and his coaching staff does a good job, is I expected them to be all right. You know, I really did, and they have been. And I think for me, it's especially after kind of a rough start, it's been the Vandals. The Vandals had a little bit of a rough run up at the Cumberland tournament. They played a very good Dietrich team, not taken away from Dietrich at all, but the Vandals did not play a great game that night at all. Did not look good. And then the next night in the third place game up at Cumberland, they played Marshall. They had 12 points at halftime and then had a pretty good second half to make it a ball game. It's like, man, this is not where you want to be. And then Newton, pretty decent first quarter, and then not a very good second quarter, and an abysmal third quarter. They were outscored 18-3, and then did the same thing again, made another run just to make it a ball game. And then come out last Friday, they're playing Altamont. That's a team the Vandals hadn't beaten in a while. You were in school the last time, weren't you?
Yeah, it was my senior year. Last time we beat them.
The last time the Vandals had beaten Altamont. And, and they came out and they really played a good first half. You know, Altamont made a run, and I think everybody expected that was going to happen. And I thought that was a big win. I know Coach Fanzo said a very big win for his group after three losses in a row. Took care of Meridian, took care of South Central, and two nice wins there. And then on the road this weekend, North Mac and Carlisle. Carlisle will be a challenge and a load on Saturday night. They're state ranked and they're undefeated here in the early going. They've already beat Pinckneyville. So that's one thing. That's another thing for the Vandals, is the schedule is not going to let up as it goes forward. But I think I've been not as impressed with what I thought coming in the year, because I thought they'd be good. I've been impressed with where they were a few games ago to where I feel like they are now. I think would be my thing is kind of seeing where they were, you know, after the Newton game maybe, and seeing where they are three games after. It's still early, obviously. They're 4-3, but I think that would be my difference is kind of watching. It's fun to see the progression sometimes, how quick it can come. And I think Quentin Stumbaugh is one that kind of has had a couple breakout games to get himself there. I think Andrew Casey's kind of had a couple breakout games. And you already knew Wade was on that level. So now you kind of got three guys that can score in that 12 to 20 range. And that's big when you've got that.
Absolutely. You know, Wade's a guy who is a three-level scorer. He's going to be at the top of every scouting report that he's going to play on this year, no question about it. But the fact that he can still have games where he's in the 20s and the high teens really just goes to show how effective of a scorer that he is. And really, I saw the Vandals first game against Cumberland, and I saw them Tuesday against South Central. It's a 2-week sample difference too, but I mean, it's a night and day difference with both Quentin Stumbaugh and Andrew Casey, like you said, with just how aggressive they've been. And Quentin's so much more confident going to the hole. He's not trying to do as much as he was against Cumberland and against Dietrich the first few games of the year. Andrew Casey's been shooting it extremely well from the outside. And those are two guys with Quentin Speed. Teams are going to crash in on him whenever, if he can be a man off the dribble, and you're basically in no man's land. Do you give up a corner three to Andrew, or do you let Quentin get to the hole? It's a Vandals team that definitely, especially if they can press and get up and down like they can, they're a team that I feel like can play with any team in the state.
I agree. And, you know, I kind of felt like in that Newton game, there was a period of time where Wade was off the floor, and just kind of watching him, it's like, who's going to shoot the ball? You know, you kind of, so it's been pretty quick. It's been a pretty quick progression and a breakthrough for those guys. And, you know, that happens when you're sophomores. And I think that's something that needs to be remembered. It's still a young team. They do start three seniors, but it's still a young team overall. You've got two sophomores starting. You got a sophomore coming off the bench. You know, now Brenton McCarty, you know, has got some experience at the varsity level from a year ago. But you still got a lot of younger guys on that team. So that was part of it. So that's kind of both of ours on the boys' side. I'll let you jump on the girls' side.
Sticking in the NTC, Brownstown St. Elmo, I knew they had a lot of good pieces coming back from that team. You only lose two seniors, but the seniors that they lost were huge impact seniors. But, I mean, Deanna Hazlett has still been, in my opinion, one of the best. It's between her and Macy Robbins, in my opinion, in terms of what I've seen as the two best players in the NTC. But as a sophomore, the numbers that she's been putting up and the things that she has been doing have really blown me away. She's very wise beyond her years. I wouldn't be shocked if by the end of her sophomore year, she's going to be knocking on 1,000 points this year. She's definitely on pace to break that by early to mid junior year. And the pieces around her, Presley Williams has been a really good outside shooter. Maddie Miller does a great job in the post. And this is a team that they're, if you look at who they've lost to, it's been to 2A and 3A schools, and they beat a 3A school in Highland at Pena. I mean, Coach Pasley has done a great job of getting these girls prepared and really loading up the schedule. And every time he and I have spoken this year, he just continues to speak so highly about the potential of this team. And he thinks that this is a team that has potential to do some really special things. And I have to agree with him. I think this is a team that is going to be a team that's going to go far in February. And I think they're going to be a team that's going to be at or near the top of the NTC when it's all said and done.
The other crazy thing about them is how young they are. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's still a really – I mean, two of the players you named, just off the top of my head, Deanna Hazlett and Maddie Miller, they're sophomores. You know, I mean, this is a baby team in a lot of ways. So, I mean, it's pretty impressive how strong they are. For me, I think it's been the Lady Vandals. They're 7-2 on the season. You know, I didn't check this. I should have. Ended up right around 7 wins last year, if I'm thinking. So, I mean, they're right where they were last year in the terms of their win total. They've done some impressive things. Ollie Whitehead has stepped in to be a second big-time scorer, really, with Maddie Lupton. So they've got two players putting up double figures and points every game. Taylor Oaks and Libby Worley are doing the job on the boards. Bella Walk stepped in as a freshman and played well. You knew they'd be better. I knew they would be better. There was no question in my mind that they would be better. Did I think they would be 7-2 right now? Absolutely not. I didn't. I just didn't think they would be 7-2 at this point. So hats off to the job that Coach Reinhardt has done. I couldn't think more of him as a coach or a person, either one. Just a great guy to be around, an enthusiastic guy. And the girls are bought in. There's no question about that. They bought into his system, and they're doing the job, and they're working. They worked hard last year. Anytime I watched them, I never didn't think they were working hard. I always knew they were, and that's frustrating when you're working hard and you're not getting results. But now they are. Yes, they've got a lot of tough games ahead, no question about that. Got a lot of conference toughness coming, but they've been right there with just about everybody. Really only Nokomis was kind of a stub-their-toe kind of game. But the rest of their schedule, they've been right there. They're 7-2. They've beaten some good teams already. So really been impressed with what they've got. And, you know, Maddie's a senior, but most of the rest of that group will be back for another year, I think. So off the top of my head, I should have looked at the roster before I said that, but a good amount of that group will be, I think Faith's a senior. I think Faith Duplay's a senior, but I should have looked at the roster. Here I go. And it's bad because sometimes I can't remember at all how old anybody is, but just mine would be the Lady Vandals so far. So
I'll echo that too. I mean, I did not, like you said, I didn't expect them to be 7-2. And when you look at some of the teams they beat, and they beat a really good Altamont team that returns a lot of pieces, that took third in state. They beat another really solid NTC program with CHBC. And, you know, you talk about Coach Reinhardt as someone who has played for him and as someone who has been around him every day on the practice court. It's hard not to fall in love with the sport whenever he's the one teaching it to you. He just comes in with such a high energy. He's a very fun guy to be around. A guy there's never a dull moment when you're with Coach Reinhardt, and anyone who has spent any bit of time with him will probably agree with that. And just it makes me happy to hear in how other people around the state think of him as a coach. I know Coach Carr said that he does a really great job whenever he and I were talking, and just as someone who played for him and has seen the success he's had at the junior high level, very happy to see him having a good start to the year so far.
Absolutely. And I think the same thing. Obviously, I didn't play for him because I think I'm older than he is. He's somebody you'd want to play for, and you know you definitely could see that. Now, they were getting better. You know, think back to last year, and last year was a rough year for them, no question. But they were getting better at the end. They were improving. You saw it. You saw a lot of improvement at the end of the season, and they were definitely moving up. And I think the other thing I'll add with Brownstown St. Elmo girls is they're getting some attention. They're up to number 7 in the Class 1A poll. And that's good because the rest of the state's taken notice of what they've done. So, well, we've went a little longer this week than we went last week, just a tad bit longer. So we're still kind of looking for a name for our podcast after week number 2. So this is Isaac Isringhausen, Todd Stapleton signing off on week number 2 of our podcast here on i70sports.com.